sure, other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Thursday, May 22nd. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi. I was going to say on a gloomy morning.
It is a gloomy morning, but it'll burn off. That's LA, yeah. You know.
It's true.
About this time of the year, that's what happens. You
yeah.
know?
It's a layer, right? I can't think what it's called.
Yeah, marine layer.
Yeah,
that's what they
it.
Call it.
Yeah.
And we're in a valley also, so sometimes that happens. You know,
right.
We get like fog here and things like mm-hmm. that. But that's the case here in LA, where we have cold currents in the ocean, obviously freezing currents, and you know, when the warm air comes over it, it starts creating clouds and things
right.
like that. You know, so.
Did you hear about all the fish that got swept up to shore? It
yeah.
was in Marina Del Rey.
Right.
I was there last night and I was like, why does it smell of fish so bad?
Really?
And then.
But were they gone already? Because they cleaned up a lot of them.
I think they've gone, but still all
the smell
is just
wow.
in the air. And
wow.
it's really, really strong.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, really I was strong. Reading that the fish had like a. Like no oxygen or something, but I don't understand that. You know, I don't know how that happened.
They got swept up onto the shore because of something.
Oh, okay.
Don't remember what that something was, but there was a reason they got swept up onto the shore. The tide was further in than usual.
Okay.
So then they got stranded and couldn't get back in the ocean.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought they were already dead in the water.
No.
And just got washed up.
Oh, not from my knowledge.
Okay. Then I didn't read the whole thing, you know, so I don't know.
No, I think the tide was stronger, or it's something to do with
and then lower, and the fish got stuck on the sand, right?
yeah and then
wow.
obviously that caused a really bad smell,
yeah,
and they had to
god
clean that.
I know, stinky fish, my god, man,
it was strong.
That's terrible. Yeah,
it was really strong.
Oh god,
yeah.
Wow, I don't know what happens, but you know, there's now they're saying there's tainted beef in stores all over the place, you know.
I saw that too.
And that's, you know, great. Just in time for Memorial Day, you know.
I'll be recalling all
yeah,
this
everybody
meat.
Wants to barbecue and stuff,
right?
You know.
I know.
Wow.
Crazy. It's typical, right?
I know.
When it comes
to
a big holiday like this. And 4th of July is right around the corner. Another
right.
big one when people
barbecue a lot.
Barbecue,
stuff.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. I know, but this stuff happens all the time. I don't know what it is. A lot
yeah.
of recalls and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know. I wanted to get out of town this weekend, but you know what? Everything is already booked, you know. I never can plan in advance. And
right.
Always thinking of the last minute, and then either rooms are very expensive or there's just no rooms
yeah.
at all.
Well, I didn't realize that Memorial Day was such like a big weekend to travel.
Yeah, it is.
I am going out of town.
Right.
But not for because it's Memorial Day weekend.
Right. Okay.
And but everyone I've spoken to is going on holiday. Is
yeah.
going to Mexico or to the East Coast. And I'm like, wow, I didn't realize that this was a huge weekend to travel.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it is. You know, people figure
yeah.
3 days off, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe some people will take Friday off tomorrow as well.
Right.
And then they just, yeah, I mean, I can't see going to Mexico for 2 days, you know.
But
maybe for four, it's worth it.
Yeah,
you know?
Maybe. I mean, come back, like, if you leave tomorrow, come back late Monday or even
right.
get a red eye.
Right.
But I'm going to have to get to the airport early tomorrow. I leave at, like, 5 p.m. So
oh,
I'm
really?
Sure I'll be busy.
Oh, so you're flying?
Yeah, I'm flying.
Up
yeah.
north, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good for you. You don't
flying
have to make
north.
The drive again.
Yeah,
you
know? No. I've done enough driving, long yeah. drives to save me like for the year.
Yeah.
I feel like all I'm doing is on long drives. So I'm happy I'm flying.
Good. Good for you. Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know. I was like thinking even if I go to Vegas or something, I want to fly. I'm tired of these drives, right. you know. But I checked and there's nothing available, you know. Everything's really expensive.
Wow.
And plus, you know what? I don't like Vegas that much, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I admitted that to myself. I lived there twice. I lived in Vegas in the 70s for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And then I lived there in the 90s, in the early 90s, for about 2 years. So,
and now it's just so different.
Yeah, it's different. Plus... it's just, yeah, there's not much to do, you know? Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I'm not a big casino person.
Right.
So other than that, there's not much to do, you know? You have to know someone to drive into town and yeah. things like that, you know?
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, so, and I don't know, I've seen everything there's to see there, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I feel like once you've lived there for a while, you've kind of, yeah. and you see a different side of a place when you live there.
That's true, yeah. So then when you see a change and it's full of tourists and a lot of traffic and stuff, you know,
yeah.
just go, oh, I'm going to stay away.
And I think there's a new hotel opening up this weekend.
Oh, really?
I think.
In Vegas?
Wow. Owned, I think so.
Owned by the Wynn maybe or something? Like
I think Caesars, but I'm not
Caesars.
100%
okay.
sure.
All right.
But I'm pretty sure. I do know that there's a new hotel opening.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why it's a busy weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah,
let's Google this.
People
let's
are
see.
Wanting to go to a new hotel in Vegas. Like, oh, a new one.
Yeah, I know. And everybody will want to go there and stuff.
Right?
I remember when I lived there, they built the Luxor Hotel. And
oh, wow.
That was...
A busy weekend, huh?
Yeah.
I bet.
It was, yeah, it was crazy, man. It was crazy. I'm trying to see, let's see, this will be the fourth property. I'm trying to see on Google if it says so I don't have to go into the website, but that doesn't work. So, and then I get an advertisement, of course. But I'm really curious to know what hotel they're opening there now.
Yeah.
So
I'll be able to tell you in the morning. I'll look at it.
It's called the SLS, I guess. It's called the SLS Vegas. Yeah,
right.
There's two major projects.
They're constantly building things in Vegas, you know?
Yeah.
Like more, and there's still, no matter how many hotels they have, they're still going to be all booked up.
Yeah.
Somehow, some way, they're still going to get thousands more people to come and occupy these rooms.
I know. And you know what? They'll find them, 1,600 rooms, man.
Yeah, because when you build a hotel, exactly, 1,600 rooms.
Yeah.
They're not just small hotels that they build.
Right.
They build these massive, gorgeous hotels.
Right, yeah. No, it's definitely called the SLS Hotel Las Vegas. And terrible name for a hotel, you know.
SLS, yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder what it stands for.
Yeah, they probably have like a chain
something.
Or something, you know.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, probably.
Yeah. I don't know, you know, but
the
it's.
New,
yeah,
new
so
hotel
that's a
in
new
Vegas.
One. It's where the Sahara used to be.
Oh,
so
gotcha.
So that's on the corner of the Strip and Sahara Boulevard. Yeah, I remember that place very well, man. I used to live there. You know what was fun is during the 70s, we would go downtown where now it's closed off to traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And have you been downtown in Vegas at all?
I don't know if I have.
I know. Some people never make it there. And I haven't been there in years. And supposedly there's like zip lining and all kinds
wow.
of stuff going on there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's like a city walk type of a thing,
uh-huh.
you know.
No, I don't think I have been there. I didn't go to anywhere that I haven't been anywhere that's blocked off.
Right,
where
other
you can't
than the
walk.
Strip,
yeah.
yeah. And no, you would know if you were downtown,
yeah.
you know. And but before that in the 70s it was just a two-way street. And we would drive there and just pick up chicks, you know, all the
oh,
time.
Wow.
It was like the funnest thing ever. If you've ever seen the movie American Graffiti, I don't know if you saw that, but that's like the 50s here in like they're cruising Van Nuys Boulevard and stuff,
uh-huh.
you know, which is here. So that was similar, you know,
right.
except that was in the 50s. This was in the 70s, but still the same idea. And people would sometimes pass out flyers from car to car. Announcing there's a party in the mountains or something, you know.
Really?
Like kegs of beer.
That's so funny because I went to see the movie Neighbors last night.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Have you heard
is
about
it good?
This
I've
with
heard
Zac
of it.
Efron and
yeah, Vince,
the other guy's
Vince
name.
Vaughn, is it?
No.
No?
I don't remember. But what really well-known actress. Actor.
Seth.
Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen. Right.
And, I mean, it's a very... It was funny, but it wasn't what I expected.
Yeah.
It wasn't as funny as I expected. Really? But there's one part where this fly is handed out for the party.
Uh-huh.
And that just reminded me of that part of the movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the handing out flyers and flyers to everyone.
I know. And there was those would be like wild parties in the mountains, you know, in the desert there. And it was fun, you know. I mean, that's how we would spend our teens.
Yeah.
Every Friday, Saturday night. And...
Sounds
so
like
those are my
way.
Memories. Yeah, those yeah. are memories from Vegas. I also have a memory from Vegas when it was, this was probably 78, 79, I don't know. And it snowed in Vegas. And I remember it was like, you know, you had to drive on the snow and it was crazy. You know,
wow,
I mean, I've
yeah.
never driven like that before. And I realized what it's like to drive on the snow. And, you know, obviously people back east and stuff, they know how to drive on it.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't, you know. So you just step on your brakes, the car keeps sliding, you know.
Right.
You don't know where to go. And,
like spins.
Yeah, and how to stop it and stuff. So that reminds me of that. And plus, this was a time when we were like doing drugs like Quaaludes and stuff, you know. Those were like really strong tranquilizers. And those were like the in thing in the 70s.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, but it would be like, it would make you numb and stuff, you know. So can you
oh,
imagine
wow.
after a night of partying like that,
then oh
you have
gosh.
To drive in the snow,
and then
you
getting
know?
The snow, yeah. no, I couldn't.
In a huge car that I had, some huge old car. Wow, man, that was crazy. So those are some of the memories.
Right. That sounds fun.
Yeah. So we're going to have a guest, actually, wow, the time's flying. We're going to have a guest in a couple minutes. We're going to talk about addiction. The book is called Beyond Addiction, and I think this is always relevant. You know,
yeah.
there's so many people addicted to
Definitely.
So many things that it sounds pretty interesting.
For
so,
sure.
Yeah.
Because it's not just, I mean, I guess this book is just general addiction because there's so many different forms of addiction.
Right, exactly. You know, and I think, you know, with some things it's not so clear that it's an addiction,
right.
you know. But the thing is, I think when it interferes with your life,
mm-hmm.
then it becomes a problem.
Yeah.
You know.
And when it's all you can think about and you can't control.
Yeah, because, you know,
anything,
I mean, if
yeah.
someone drinks or smokes pot or something and they don't, you know, and it's just they're fully functional, you know, they don't really change and people can deal with them, then they're okay. But a lot of people, especially with the heavier drugs, you become somebody else, you know.
Yeah.
And then you alienate your family and your friends and stuff and work, you miss time at work.
Right.
You know, and then people realize that, boy, this
is taking over.
Yeah, he's off the wagon, you know.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's hard, you know. An addiction mm-hmm. is a hard thing, you know. I mean, I smoke cigarettes and I feel I'm very addicted to them, but it doesn't interfere with my life, you know what
right.
I'm saying? So it's not like an addiction like heavy drugs or...
where you can't function. And,
right,
yeah.
you know, or mm-hmm. even like, let's say like gambling addiction or sex addiction and stuff where you don't really ruin your body or anything. You don't do anything to your body, but it affects your life,
yeah.
you know. It totally affects your life.
Mm-hmm.
You're totally engulfed in this and totally preoccupied with your addiction. And I think that's what it is. So we'll ask her. There's three authors to the book. And we're going to talk to Nicole Kosanke, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So she'll call in a couple minutes. What else? There's a lot of things going on, you know. You mentioned the eBay thing.
I mentioned before.
Before the show,
yeah. The eBay got hacked.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, just to hack eBay is
yeah.
just crazy, right?
It is. It
to
is.
Hack
but people are like, they're focused on companies and websites, and they just won't stop until
this could be like a year's worth of like trying to do this. And I guess AOL was hacked in April. But this hacking took place a couple months ago. It was like February, March, end of February, beginning of March. They just found out.
Really? It just happened? Wow.
Yeah, they only just found out.
I thought it just happened the other day.
No.
Wow.
They got hacked at the end of February, beginning of March, but they only found out 2 weeks ago. and
and then they just sent out notices now.
Yeah,
right?
But I guess there's a big controversy surrounding how they've dealt with it, because they only, I mean, I have an eBay account and I haven't got a notice, but my mom did get a notice.
Right.
So I think there's controversy about how they've dealt with this situation.
Yeah.
I mean, 148 million active accounts were affected.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. No. The company isn't saying how many of the 148 million active accounts are affected.
But that's how many they
have. How many they have.
Wow.
But I don't think they know.
Right.
How many.
Yeah, maybe they don't. And no. I guess what they're saying is that why did they wait so long to notify people? And even when they did, they just put something on their front page.
Exactly.
You know.
Well, I don't think that they knew. I think they've only found out. Because they only realized that a couple of the employees' credentials had been stolen.
Right.
It wasn't until 2 weeks ago that they realized that.
Oh, wow.
So they didn't know that they'd been hacked. And then when they did more forensic investigation of the computers, they found out the actual extent of the theft.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's take our guest because they're calling. And we're going to go ahead and take that. Good morning. You're on the air. Is this Nicole?
This is.
Hi. Nicole Kosanke, right?
Yes, that's me.
Yes. Welcome to the show, Nicole.
And thank you.
I'm sitting here with Charlotte, and we were just talking about addiction a little bit. You wrote the book Beyond Addiction, How Science and Kindness Help People Change. And you wrote this with a couple of other writers. How did you guys get together to write the book?
Well, the three of us, Dr. Carrie Wilkins, Dr. Jeff Foote, and myself, have really been working together clinically and in research settings for quite a number of years. So we have really worked hard to try to bring evidence-based practices, all the stuff that we learn in research studies, into practice, into day-to-day practice when we're working clinically with people dealing with substance abuse. So that's been sort of our background. And, you know, working with families has been a natural, turn for us to really understand how families can be helpful.
Right.
Did you never want to just write a book by yourself? What made you want to go into it with two other people?
Well,
take all the credit.
Is a huge endeavor, and it was actually a really great process because we were able to go over each other's work and add in things from each of our experiences, and we've each been involved in different research projects over the years. So we sort of added in different pieces that we each had uniquely and come to sort of a similar voice in the end, because we do work together, so we have sort of a common language. So it was actually great. It was a great process.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Now, so you guys have like a new approach or a unique or a different approach to the 12-step programs that are pretty widely used by people.
Yeah, but I think that most people know what the 12-step programs are, and there's a real prevalence in our society for understanding addiction from that context. The approach that we talk about, though, is called CRAFT, the Community Reinforcement and Family Training Approach, and it's really not new. It's been around for a couple of decades now, and there's a lot of great research supporting how effective it is, but it's unique in the sense that CRAFT is an approach that's really designed and targets working specifically with family members who are worried about somebody else's substance use. So it's really not targeting the person with the substance use problem themselves. It's targeting the people around them, the people that are worried, they want to help, but they really don't know how.
Right.
And so that's the approach that CRAFT is.
Oh, wonderful. So, and this makes sense, you know, because I know even in the 12-step programs, they let you know that you can't do it yourself. You need to reach out to people and stuff. And so that's exactly what you're acknowledging here, that people have to be involved, family, friends, things like that, in order for you to break your addiction.
Well, you're right. It's such a communal issue. You know, people are more likely to smoke cigarettes if a lot of people around them smoke cigarettes. People are more likely to drink heavily if that's the norm in their social group. You know, we influence each other all the time in so many ways. And it is true that, you know, these kinds of issues are really devastating in how much they isolate people from each other, both because, you know, there's a lot of shame around, you know, talking openly about it. But also, I think in our culture, we've been given sort of the impression that, you know, you really can't do anything until the person is ready themselves. And that's just not true. You know, the research really supports a different way of thinking about it, which is that you can do a lot to influence people. You know, there's a lot that the person with the problem needs to do, but in terms of a relationship, you can really do a lot of things differently.
Right.
So you think that the family and friends and loved ones can really help push this person to a bed, or the addict, into getting better, even if they don't want to themselves?
Absolutely. You know, the CRAFT approach was initially designed specifically for loved ones who have a problem with substances but are completely refusing to get help. So they didn't even let people into the study if the person was willing to get help. And what they found is that, you know, family members, first and foremost, they feel better. When they get some support, they really start attending to their own self-care. They really learn how to feel better, and they do feel better. They get social supports. But the other thing that happens is that the person they're worried about does start to make changes. And that is, even though they started off the whole process really not being motivated. And I think there's sort of a way that family members and relationships in general can influence each other in such profound ways that may not be dramatic. It's not like, you know, waking up the next day and boom, he's a different person. Right. But more, you know, sort of a gradual change. And you know, we'd all like there to be, you know, sort of a radical shift in scary behaviors. But actually, most change happens in a gradual way.
Right. Wow. So the question is, sometimes people are not willing to be helped, and they just don't want the help and stuff. Is there anything to do in that case, or do you just let them go?
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot you can do. I mean, so let's say you're talking about an adolescent or a young 20-something child who's living with their parents.
Right.
You know, if that person is smoking a lot of pot or kind of stalling out in school or going out binge drinking or all of the above, you know, the parents can have a lot of influence over really paying attention to what the kid is doing in a negative sense, and setting contingencies around that, you know, consequences, using allowance and the leverage that they have,
right.
But also really using the positive elements that they have in their relationship. So, you know, so frequently in families when there's substance abuse present, there's such a negative swirl of communication and lots of yelling and focus on the negative behaviors, and that's really understandable because it can be terrifying. But one of the things that CRAFT really talks about is figuring out, okay, if you don't want your kid to be smoking pot or binge drinking, what would they be doing instead?
Right.
Let's figure out how to really change the environment so that you're nurturing those positive things in a concrete way. You know, is there space for this kid to be doing something else? Are there opportunities, excuse me, for them to socialize with people that aren't using or drinking? You
right.
know, those are sort of obvious questions, but, you know, the community and the family can really do a lot to open up spaces for positive behaviors to grow.
Right.
So this book isn't just about addiction, really. I mean, it's kind of a guide for a lot of family and loved ones to really keep their loved ones on track.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, we clearly wrote it for people who are worried about somebody's substance use, but I've heard a lot from people who said, you know, I don't even have somebody with addiction problems in my house, but there's so many good communication strategies that are really effective for just communicating with people at work and people I have had difficulty with. There's such good self-care strategies. And that's all so important for families that are under a lot of duress. But let's face it, you know, there's a lot of stress going on in a lot of families. So I think there's a bunch of pieces that really do apply to a wider range of people.
Right. And, you know, what you're saying makes sense because I figure, you know, when a person stops the addiction or the behavior, it leaves a big hole in their lives. So you're saying they should replace it with something else, something more productive, maybe exercise or socializing or things like that.
Absolutely. And that kind of a change usually, like I said before, doesn't happen on a dime. It doesn't typically happen with sort of an aha moment. It's more likely to sort of gradually eke its way out into a more sustaining change. And if the environment is really supporting that effort, it can really go a long way to help in the maintenance of the change and sustaining it over the long run. But, you know, I think as a culture, we tend to not want to think about the fact that substances are actually rewarding. You know, they feel good to some degree. Obviously, they cause a lot of problems and havoc and, you know, cause a lot of devastation in families. But they're being used for a reason. And understanding that reason and really having some empathy for what the goal is, it doesn't feel like sort of a rational choice to smoke pot from one perspective. But from another, you know, once you understand, like, maybe they really are wanting to be closer to their peers and that feels like the normal thing, or maybe they have an anxiety disorder that's not being treated adequately. And just understanding that stuff, I think our book really helps people to sort of cue into what their particular loved one might be using substances to try to accomplish. And that gives you sort of a roadmap for understanding what are the positive, healthy things that I could be doing to support that would take the place of this smoking.
Right. Wow. Now, so my question is this, you know, and we were discussing this a little earlier, that an addiction obviously becomes a problem when it affects your life, it affects other people and stuff. But what about, you know, if someone, you mentioned pot and stuff, you know, if someone is addicted to marijuana and it doesn't interfere with their lives, it doesn't, you know, I mean, but it's still an addiction, right? So, I mean, that person might not have as much an incentive to do anything because they don't perceive they have a problem.
Right. Well, there's a couple of different concepts in there. I mean, one thing that we talk about in the book is that, you know, the word addiction means such different things to different people. You know, when you talk about a disease, for instance, addiction, substance use problems, those are not a disease in the physiological sense, but in a brain sense, you know, what are the changes that happen neurologically? There's a clear syndrome that occurs. So even if somebody, let's say somebody is smoking pot every single day, but they're going to work, pretty functional, have relationships, don't seem to have like a mood disturbance, aren't suffering from sort of physical problems, or it's not getting in the way of them exercising, taking care of themselves in other ways. I would say that that's certainly not the common scenario that I hear about when people are smoking pot every day, but it obviously it happens. That person, if that person is a 17-year-old, that's, or even a 21-year-old, what I would be asking about is the neurological consequences there. That, right. You know, we really are learning so much more about the brain and the ways that it changes really up until like 24, 25 years old. And if the brain is getting this input that like it's being provided this substance on a regular basis, those changes are influenced by that occurrence. So they're really, the brain is being evolving with a really incorrect assumption about what it's going to be provided on a regular basis, and really can alter the course of that physiology. Wow. Will they become like, you know, a bum on the street and never go anywhere, never get to college? You know, I don't think that those kinds of dramatic changes are guaranteed, but I think that the subtle changes, you know, the loss of opportunity, the right. ways in which kids fall behind. And when I say kids, like really, you know, still a 21-year-old is still developing in their brain. So, mm. I mean, I think that the word addiction kind of throws us off because it feels so stark, but actually there are lots of subtle changes that happen in a detrimental way from youth that wouldn't necessarily qualify itself into a diagnostic category, for instance, like substance dependence, let's say.
Right. Do you think, because, I mean, this word addiction, a lot of people get really hung up on. Do you think people need to admit that they are an addict and they are addicted to be able to move forward and get over the addiction?
That's such a good question. You know, some people really find comfort in calling themselves an alcoholic, in calling themselves an addict, and they identify with a lot of qualities in other people that are common to them, and it feels like a community. It feels really important to identify with that category. The problem that we talk about in the book with calling yourself an addict or calling somebody else an addict is that there's such a negative connotation there,
right.
and a lot can get lost. So, you know, if I have a client who's saying to me, well, you know, I just went out and drank again last night, but that's what us addicts do. You know, we just don't think and we go ahead. Right. Well, if that's the sort of blanket explanation, then we don't get underneath that to like, but wait a second, what happened? You know, when did your plans go astray? You know, when did you make a decision that you weren't going to go home as you had planned? What influenced those things? And that nitty-gritty level of detail is so important in terms of helping somebody really make changes. And if you just say, well, it's because I'm an addict, then you really whitewash all of the ambiguities that can be really instrumental in helping you to actually move forward and make changes. So I always tell people, you know what, if it helps you to call yourself that with that label, then go for it. But don't let it sort of whitewash what the details are that make you a unique person and that help you understand yourself.
Right. Yeah, so it's sort of like giving an excuse, you know, like saying, well, that's the way I am and, you know, there's nothing I can do, blah, 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 you know.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's fascinating, Nicole. There's so much to talk about this stuff, and that's why you wrote the book. The book is Beyond Addiction, How Science and Kindness Help People Change. Now, I just wanted to ask you quickly about the subtitle here. How do you really combine science and kindness in the book?
Well, those are two words that really don't often go together, right?
You
know, and I think that we think about kindness as being sort of separate from any research-based concept, but in fact, being kind to people we've shown a lot of evidence that tells us that kindness and support and social support and really tapping into what people are motivated to do in a positive sense, what their healthy inputs are, that can be really positive in terms of helping somebody make changes. So I think we tend to think like with substance abuse, like you got to just get them going on the right way. You got to use the hammer when you can and kind of push them into the right direction. And you know, if you think about it, like who wants to be treated like that? Very few people sort of respond well and get more motivated when they're backed into a corner and sort of corralled in this confrontational kind of way. And I think that substance abuse issues are actually not different from a lot of other issues in this particular regard, that motivation is really enhanced when we support it, when we figure out what are the person's motivations in a positive sense and support those, and really be kind and gentle with people and not back them into a corner. Because one thing that the research shows unequivocally is that confrontational strategies really push people underground. They can have long-lasting consequences in terms of somebody not being honest about what's going on or not being honest with themselves because they really feel cornered. So we really wanted to sort of put a speakerphone to this concept of kindness as being, you know, a really laudable concept to be using even with this population.
Right.
Wow.
Well, fascinating stuff. Nicole Kosanke, the book is Beyond Addiction. Do you have a website or anything to back the book?
BeyondAddictionBook.com. You can check out some portions of the book there. It's also, you know, online and bookstores, etc. And there's a couple other resources I might, if it's okay, to just put out there. There is the 20MinuteGuide.com, which has sort of a workbook kind of strategies to help. There's one version for parents and one version for partners or spouses that has a lot of information that kind of plays off of the book in that sense.
Right.
And then our website where we work, the Motivation Center for Motivation and Change, is motivationandchange.com, which has lots of articles about substance use and family members, how they can be helpful, and people who have substance problems themselves, how to help themselves.
Right. Well, very relevant stuff, and I think it's always relevant because people are always addicted, and I like this approach. You know, I know that many people cannot stand the 12-step programs. You know, it doesn't fit their lifestyle or their beliefs or whatever, and obviously addiction is not just the problem of the person himself or herself, but also the family and the friends as well that are around. And I can see how compassion can really help, you know, make someone feel wanted and loved and so forth, and maybe get them off their addiction.
That's a great word. Compassion is exactly right. I think we tend to think that if you're compassionate, maybe you'll get taken advantage of or someone will get over on you. And actually, there's so much value to compassion in this world. And you're right, families are so painfully impacted by these issues that they deserve a lot of support and guidance for what they can do.
Yeah. Well, Nicole, thank you so much for enlightening us so much this morning. And
thank you.
Of course, when did the book come out? Is it recently?
It came out in February.
Oh, okay. Wonderful. So it's still new. And well, congratulations on it. You know,
Thanks so much.
Amazing.
Appreciate
I know it's always good. Sure. Is this the first book you were part of?
Yes,
oh,
it is.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations. I know a book's like a little new baby in the family. So
it sure is.
All right, Nicole, all the best to you.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow. A lot of great stuff. You know,
I mean,
I'm just thankful that I don't have to deal with like heavy drug addictions in the family and things like that, you know. I mean, you know, my son smokes pot and stuff, but, you know, what are you going to do at this age? And she was talking about it, you know, about the age of the early 20s. It's hard to get through to them, you know. I know.
That's like, I mean, I don't smoke pot, but it's so normal.
It is.
Everyone I know does. It's normal.
Yeah, many people just self-medicate, you know, and they figure, you know, it's like it makes me feel calmer and whatever, you know, and everybody's got their reason.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the problem, though, is that so many people do use it that so people perceive it as to be like not harmful or whatever, you know. And she was right about the fact that the brain still develops at that age.
And I heard smoking a joint is the equivalent of smoking like 20 cigarettes.
Really?
That's not
like
exact,
for your body and
but
stuff?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's not exact, but it's around. It's a huge number. I was shocked when I heard that. I was like, wow.
Yeah. Wow.
So, I mean, that shows because, I mean, cigarettes is really damaging.
Right.
And people know that, but I think people forget that pot also is.
Right, yeah. I mean, you inhale it, you keep it down for a long time and stuff, you know. I mean, who knows? Yeah, who knows what goes on in your body. But, yeah, I personally enjoy it, but, you know.
One of the testimonies of the book said, this book would have saved my family and me a lot of time, money, and most importantly, pain.
Yeah.
So it shows how strong this book is.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, you see like especially alcoholics and stuff, because they get violent or they get aggressive and things like that, confrontational. It's not like, you know, I mean, you go to a coffee shop in Amsterdam or something of people smoking pot, and then you go into a bar of people drinking. There's a difference.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there's a big difference.
Yeah. So, you know, whereas with drinking, it can really ruin a family.
Yeah.
And so I think it's good when a family gets involved, you know.
Definitely.
And, but, you know, when you're deep in an addiction, I guess it's hard to see
you're in a hole.
Yeah, how people can help you out of that hole. Yeah, I know.
Completely.
So let's see some other things. I guess did you hear that they found this kidnapped victim here in California? She was 15 years old when she was kidnapped.
I did see. So I didn't see the details, but I did see that she'd been found.
Yeah, and so she's 25 years old now. She was gone for 10 years.
That's crazy. 10 years of your life, and it's not. I mean. 15 to 25 is that's like kind of the most important year.
It really is. It's formative years, you know.
Yeah.
And wow. And then it also, like, you know, when you learn how to deal with people and everything and to be and to live in fear and physical and sexual abuse, you know, for someone so young, and then she grows up and thinks that's the only way life can be.
Right. How do you and I mean, how do you recover from that?
Right. Yeah, that's the thing, you know, like those three girls in Cleveland, right? Or where was it? Yeah, in Cleveland, I think.
And it says here he drugged and kidnapped his girlfriend's 15-year-old daughter.
Yeah, so I guess. So this was like an ex-boyfriend of the mother.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, live-in boyfriend.
Yeah. Wow. He's 41.
Yeah, and then he scared the girl by saying that her family would be deported. And
gosh.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's crazy. Like, the girl that lives next door, she's 24. She's like, I don't believe it. It doesn't seem right that this young girl, she occasionally babysat the young girl.
Really?
And didn't know that this girl had was been abducted. Kidnapped.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you don't. I mean, news, you're on the news for, like, what, 2 months? Tops.
Right.
And then everything goes silent.
Yeah.
It's only true. If you look up on the internet, who's been abducted in California?
Right.
Which no one really sits there and does that. So you're not going to know if you're suddenly asked, oh, you babysit my daughter, he probably said. You wouldn't think anything of it.
Right. I know. And they're not, I guess they're not really saying how they found her and stuff, you know. Let's see. No, she says, the woman contacted her sister on Facebook and reached out to authorities. Okay, so that's how they found out.
Right.
Yeah, I'm amazed he even let her have Facebook, you know. I mean, this is...
I know.
To have any communication with the world, but I guess that was his demise.
And he was probably trying to make her seem... have as normal of a life as possible.
Yeah, I mean, apparently they were both working as janitors and stuff at night, so people wouldn't notice and stuff, and got her fake IDs and locked her in the garage. And
I mean, it's just a lot of work.
Yeah,
that's a lot of work.
It is, like, a lot of work, you know. But yeah, but people are like, you know, they're nuts. You know, they want a sex slave or whatever. Right. You know? And
I mean, fake IDs, keep her undercover, like, make sure she's not found.
Right.
It's just a lot of work. That just sounds like so much effort. You know what I mean? To try and hide, like, what are you really getting from it? But I mean, I think that's where it goes down to.
Yeah.
Like, it's something mental, that something's going on with you that is making you do this to someone, you know?
I know. So, yeah, so good for her that she was found, but how many girls and boys are out there that are not being found, you know? And that's very sad stuff. Yeah, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's scary, you know? I mean, because I'm sure none of these parents did anything on purpose or absentmindedly or whatever, you know? I mean,
well, I wonder if, I mean, for this to be the mother's ex-boyfriend, I wonder if she knew there was something weird.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
Yeah. I don't see... Yeah, why wouldn't she report it, you know?
Yeah.
But maybe she did and she didn't know it was him.
I just mean, like, his behavior.
Right.
There's got to have been something that kind of gave it away that maybe he was a little odd.
Right.
Could potentially kidnap her daughter, you know? There's got to be some kind of... something that just gives it away.
I guess, but sometimes you never know, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, people seem normal.
I guess
and
so.
Then, you know, most people, you know, that get arrested for things like this, the neighbors say, oh, he was a nice, quiet man or things like that.
Yeah,
you know?
You're so right.
So you can't really tell.
Yeah, gosh, that's the worst part.
I know. And they live among us, all these predators, you know? So, yeah, anyway, the other day I posted about the Levi's jeans thing, and you actually
responded.
So, yeah, I guess the CEO of Levi's said that you shouldn't wash your jeans if you want to preserve them, you know, which I always say, you know, it's like, and it's not just jeans, but washing machines and dryers really ruin clothes, you know? I mean, they take away the shine, you know, like all that, you know, all that lint that you take out, this is what dulls out the clothes, you know?
Yeah.
All the top layer of the cloth comes off. So so I can see where where that makes sense and stuff. But, you know, but the problem is, you know, if you don't wash them, what happens? You know, I mean, it's going to stink.
Yeah, gross, right?
Yeah, it is gross, you know. Yeah. I mean, I never wear the same clothes twice without washing them, you know. I mean, the thing is, even if I wear jeans for a couple hours, I'll wash them again. You know, I just don't like when, you know, ones from a previous day. So how can you possibly do this, you know? And so they mentioned something about putting them in the freezer, and you said, you didn't say something.
I don't think I commented.
No,
it
was somebody else that wrote, you can do it with shoes, too. It was Chris Brown that wrote that. Okay. But, you just liked the thing, I guess. So,
but I'm going to try it because I just washed a pair of black jeans and they're no longer black.
Right.
They almost look gray.
Wow.
I'm like, great.
I know. And especially with black clothes, it happens, you know? It doesn't stay. When it's in the store, it looks so great.
I know.
You know, solid black and everything. Mm-hmm. And then you wash it and it's not the same anymore.
No. Definitely, you know, not the same.
Yeah. So they need to figure out something about that, you know. I don't know. I think it's a dryer. It's not even as much the washer.
See, but I usually don't dry my jeans. Especially I don't dry my jeans because they're so tight already that if I put them in the dryer, there'd be no hope of me getting
really?
Them on. Yeah. So I don't usually put them in the dryer, but even the washing machine, I mean... Literally,
so you think
my jeans are like gray.
Really?
They're not even black anymore.
Wow.
I know, it's really bummed.
Yeah, I know.
Like, great.
I know, that's why I enjoy buying wearing the clothes when they're new, you know?
I know.
After a couple of times, they're not the same anymore. And that's why I say, you know, one should never spend that, you know, so much money on clothes, you know? I mean, like the other day I saw jeans that I really liked. I can't remember the name, it's G something. And,
G-Buy Guess?
Is it G-Buy Guess? Maybe it is. Yeah, maybe it is. I got it over at Macy's and stuff. So they have all the high-end jeans and stuff.
Yeah.
Usually I try not to spend more than 50, maybe 80 bucks on jeans, you know?
Right.
I spent like 150 on those because I really liked them. And I figured they're going to last, you know? And they probably will.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they're not going to look the same anymore.
Don't dry them.
Yeah.
Don't wash them.
Well, I did already, but I did. I folded them inside out, so maybe that helped a little bit.
I did hear that helps.
It helps a little bit. But
after I washed my black jeans, I heard if you wash them inside out, it helps.
Yeah, it might.
It's like, well, great, too late.
Yeah, I know. So try flipping them out and see if it works out for you.
Yeah.
But there's no way I'm going to put them in the freezer. I mean, come on.
Have a freezer full of clothes
instead of
clothes.
And it's just going to kill the bacteria, but I don't think it's really going to get rid of the smell. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how.
Yeah, like sweat and stuff, you know.
And I don't know how sanitary that is.
Yeah, and it won't smell good anyway. Yeah.
And shoes, I definitely wouldn't want to put in my freezer.
Yeah, I know.
I had a separate fridge with a freezer too, maybe if I had two freezers, but I don't think I'll be putting them in my regular freezer with my fried peas.
Yeah. We'll just continue buying more jeans and spending our money in new ones.
Right.
Yeah. But he says, you know, I mean, he did say you should do it with new jeans, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when you buy jeans frequently, you know, so you don't have them like for a year or something not washed.
Right.
Things like that. So. I mean, come on, you know.
No, that would be gross.
Yeah.
And I can't think how that would work being in the freezer because then they're wet. You have to take them out, dry them. So then,
well, not necessarily. You can put them inside a plastic bag or something, right? But then maybe that.
Oh, but I feel like that doesn't do anything.
Well, I think it's the cold that kills the bacteria.
Oh.
So yeah. So maybe.
Oh, maybe it
that
doesn't.
Would make a difference, but. But I know even when you put it in plastic bags, there's like ice that gets in there and
stuff. Right,
yeah. I don't know how, but probably from the air or something.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
There's moisture locked in there. Because otherwise, I don't understand how it can, you know, I like put bags in the freezer and stuff.
Right.
And there's ice inside. You know, like when still I put bread and
frozen.
Stuff.
Still gets super frozen, yeah, because it's that cold, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is it for today, Charlotte. Getting ready for the weekend. If I had somewhere to go, we would have taken tomorrow off. But I don't have anywhere to go. So I'll stay in town and celebrate that way, I guess.
Yeah.
And plus, you know, remember, Memorial Day is not really a day to be happy. I mean, we're remembering.
Remembrance,
dead,
right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We remember dead soldiers and stuff. So like in Israel on Memorial Day, it's a very somber day. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. people just don't. And it's usually a day before Independence Day, so then people celebrate after that.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, it's a bank holiday in England, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's to memorialize the dead, you know, that fought for this country and stuff. So, although I'm sure, you know, in their life and in their death, they would have wanted us to celebrate and be happy. But take a moment just to think about all these people.
Right.
You know. Anyway, thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte, right here on LA Talk Radio.